Hi, I'm Dr. Felicia Mebben. Welcome to Health Services Unplugged.
Here's another question for you. What is health services research or health policy research? For every place online you look or every person you ask who even tries to help you with this question, you'll probably get a different answer. This is one of those where you sit influences where you stand situations. If you're a physician, you may have one response. If you're a policymaker, you may have another. If you're the chief financial officer of a county hospital, well, you get the idea. For this chat on this question and more about the field of health services research, I talk with Dr. Lisa Simpson, president and CEO of Academy Health, and just as importantly, a fellow Trekkie.
A little bit about your career and how you got started and why.
I think the simplest answer, the most direct, is that I've had a very varied career because I started as a pediatrician and then learned very quickly that I sort of wanted to help more children than the one child or family in front of me. And I moved on to public health and had the opportunity to work in a state health department. And then realized that I really felt I needed more information about how to make decisions that would help the mothers and children if it was in the state of Hawaii. And that drew me to health services research. I wanted to understand how things worked and how I could make care better for populations and communities. So I ended up in a postdoctoral program in health services research and health policy. And from there, went on to work in the federal government, full-time academics, and got active with Academy Health over 20 years ago during my postdoc, and I've been active ever since. And who would have believed that I would have ended up as the CEO of the organization now? But I hope you can tell just from the tone of my voice that I'm pretty happy with the work that I do. I find it incredibly fulfilling, and every day I learn something new, which is a real privilege.
That's amazing. I think you and I might have been active at the beginning with it about the same time, in the early 90s?
Yes, early 90s,
that's when
exactly.
I was started to engage with, what was it, AHSR at that time?
Exactly. It was a small group back then. But yeah, the field has really grown.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's much more welcoming now. I think, you know, back then it was some stalwarts were involved, and I think folks, it maybe wasn't as multidisciplinary mm-hmm. as it is mm-hmm. now and as broad, but it's a really big field and with lots of different voices, which mm-hmm. I find very exciting and rewarding.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoy the organization because it was the one place where that was direct to the research I was doing. So my background's in health policy, and I focused on political analysis, and so this was one place, even though there wasn't a lot of political analysis at the time, it grew over time. But it did seem to be a good fit for the training that I was getting. It was great to have a place to go and meet other people who were doing similar training. And I've benefited from that over the years, too. So.
Yeah, so have I. And when I go to our annual meeting each year, I don't get to as many sessions as I would like because of my official duties.
Mm-hmm.
But the science is just, you know, the new research, the new findings. We just did a review of the late-breaking abstracts yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
There's some amazing new findings coming out, which, of course, I can't tell you what they are because I've got the authors will be presenting them in June. But,
stay tuned.
You know, talk about relevant. It's about, you know, what did we learn from this second year of open enrollment in the health insurance exchanges?
Mm-hmm.
What are we learning about disparities? What are we learning about payment and delivery models? You know, really, I mean, this is what we need to understand because so much is changing in our healthcare system
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and how we pay for, organize, and care. And I always quote Don Berwick, where the old adage, which is, all improvement is change, but not all change is improvement. And health services research helps us tease out which changes are actually better for patients, better for costs, better for populations.
Right, which is why it's so important, even though a lot of people probably haven't heard of it.
It is
really
right.
important.
Right. Yeah, most health services researchers comment that I've spoken with comment that they have trouble explaining this to their parents.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So let's give it a try.
Let's give it a try.
I'm giving you the unenviable task of defining health services research.
Well, like many aspects of research, there is an official definition that Academy Health has developed. But frankly, I find it hard to get that definition out in one breath.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not going to use that one.
Okay.
And so what I tend to use when I'm explaining it to folks who aren't from our field is that I say it's research that helps us understand what works in healthcare. Not what works in the laboratory or which drugs work, but when your average person, when people are going to get healthcare, what's going to work to help them stay healthy and get better if they do get sick? And the important thing is it's not just what works in terms of drugs and treatments, but what works in terms of how you coordinate care, how you organize care. And the answer is not one size fits all. So you have to ask what works for whom.
Mm-hmm.
And under what circumstances?
Right.
If you're an elderly patient living in a rural community, you're going to need very different types of services, maybe telehealth, maybe some community supports, really a different mix of supports and interventions and services than if you're a millennial living in a big city. And so we have to do research to understand all the differences of what patients and their families need and how that varies by who they are and where they live.
So what are some other terms people might hear for this kind of research?
There are lots of them, which is one of the challenges we have in our field. So I tend to hear when I talk, well, first of all, our field is very multidisciplinary. You explained you come with a background in political science.
Mm-hmm.
I have a background in pediatrics. We have social scientists of many kinds, health economists, sociologists, PhD health services researchers, nurses, pharmacists,
finance people.
Lots of expertise is needed to tease out and understand these very complex problems. And so I mention that because depending on who I'm talking to, I might use slightly different terms. So for those who work in clinical care delivery, I hear them talking about health services research more as care delivery research,
mm-hmm.
or clinical care research. So really about sort of what I would call the product of the interaction. And that has more resonance and meaning to that group. For others, I've heard them describe it as more understanding how to get the most value out of our healthcare dollar,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
get better outcomes and lower costs for the same amount of spending.
Mm-hmm. Like cost effectiveness.
Exactly. And for others, a part of our field is implementation research, which is because it really speaks to one of the big challenges that we know from science, from our research, is that on average, only 50% of recommended care is delivered. So the average patient only gets 50% of what they should be getting from their healthcare system. And this was a study published in New England Journal now about 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that there are big gaps between what people are getting and yet what we know works. We have the evidence about the treatments they should be getting, the prevention screenings, and yet they're not getting them. And that's where implementation research comes in, which is we know what works. We've answered that question, whether it's for diabetes or heart disease. We know what care those patients should be getting, but they're still not getting it. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
And trying to design interventions to get care to the right person, the right patient, at the right time in the right way. And so that's a big area of research as well within our field. So some people call it implementation research.
Mm-hmm. So that's the same. I was a dean of students at the UNC Gilling School of Global Public Health, and I got that question of, like, what is public health? And I would do the same thing. I would just start to describe the different aspects of it because it's such a big topic that's so important. And also connected to health services research.
Absolutely.
Includes health services research. I'm not sure.
Well, they kind of overlap because one of the areas of health services research that has grown in recent years, in the last decade, is the recognition that health services are not just delivered by the traditional medical care system, they're also delivered by the public health system. And so there's this new field within health services research of public health services and systems research to really understand what is the role of governmental public health in meeting the needs of populations. And some of their roles are, traditional individual level services, but clearly a more important role that's very unique to governmental public health is looking at the population level and understanding how do you build systems at the community so that you're preventing disease, you're, you know, taking care of the environment, you're, you know, making sure that there's injury prevention in the community, all these other aspects. Public health and health services research, you know, have come together around public health services research.
So where do people do this research? It sounds like there would be, and I know that there are a lot of people involved in it. So how do you sort of describe, you know, what kinds of organizations?
Yeah. Well, you know, the answer to that is changing. We know from our member surveys that a decade ago, most of, and I'm using the category of our members as sort of a proxy for who are health services researchers. There are more than we have as members, but we have nearly 5,000 members, so it's a pretty good representation. And about a decade ago, the majority, 65-70%, were working in academic settings. So they were doing research in academic settings. Some of them are clinically prepared, so they're also doing clinical services. But the vast majority were in academic settings 10 years ago. Our most recent survey last year saw that percentage drop to just over 50%. So it's about a 20% drop. Mm-hmm. And where they're showing up more is in the private sector. We've always had about 10% of our members who are in the government sector because they're a key audience. Not only do some of them produce evidence, but they also use evidence to make decisions mm-hmm. all the time. So we try very hard at Academy Health to engage not just those we call the evidence producers, usually researchers, but also the evidence users. And I think the shift in our membership is not because we're losing the academic researchers. Our membership has grown, and we're seeing more and more graduates of health services research programs actually finding jobs in the private sector. We're talking about delivery systems that are building the capacity for more health services research because it's helping them understand how to organize and deliver their services more effectively.
So, for example, they might have a research institute or a group of people who are supporting that, extending what they do by developing their own research.
Exactly. And we work with a number of leading, you know, very well-known health systems in this country for that very reason. So Mayo Clinic, the Geisinger, Intermountain Healthcare, Kaiser Permanente, so many, I could go on, but mm-hmm. many health systems where they have built deep capacity for research themselves. And so they are recruiting and researchers are working there. The difference in that type of research is that it is more closely connected to the operational needs of the delivery system. And so as opposed to, and you know, not all academic research is this way, but often academically based research is driven by the interests of the individual investigator mm-hmm. and producing really important work, but may not immediately connect to what a decision maker in a delivery system is struggling with in terms of, you know, we don't have really good follow-up for low-income, you know, heart disease patients. What are better ways to make sure they get the care they need once they leave the hospital? Mm-hmm. Those are the questions the systems have right now. Very practical but complicated questions that need really robust methods to tease out. Because the important thing is to, you know, any system, any decision maker out in healthcare today has limited resources. They're making resource allocation decisions every day. If they spend their time using an improvement approach that we don't know works, mm-hmm. they've wasted that money and they haven't invested it in another intervention that would work. And so bringing that evidence forward, it's just as important to know what works in care coordination or patient-centered medical homes as it is to know what drug to take, because both critically affect the outcomes that patients
right.
experience.
Right. So they're in health, some of the other private sector settings, they're in hospital systems, they're
health plans are also recruiting more. And I think also one of the things we're seeing since the Affordable Care Act and the market dynamics is some blurring of these traditional lines between who was a health plan and what they did and what's a delivery system. Delivery systems are taking on risk and paying for care. Health plans are doing some more direct-to-consumer services storefronts. So there's some of these traditional boundaries are fading. But another sector where we're seeing more health services researchers working is obviously in the life sciences and data analytics, whether that's pharmaceutical, bio, medical devices. And on the data analytics, this explosion of all kinds of new information streams, whether it's electronic health records, personal health records, quantified self, all the wearables that are generating,
Fitbits, the Apple Watches.
Exactly. It's just this, you know, tsunami of new data. How useful that data can be, can it lead to information and knowledge that's actually actionable and improves not just the system's ability to make care better, but our own individual ability to make better choices for healthcare, our own health? We'll see. I think that's still an open question.
So how does Academy Health then support health services researchers of the field?
Well, a number of ways. And that's the part that I find particularly exciting. So the important thing about helping the field and our members is first understanding what their needs are. And so we work really hard to try to get that feedback. We know that of our nearly 5,000 members, around 1,000 are students. And so they're the future. They're our entry, you know, our sort of promise to really continue to keep answering the important questions. And so we work hard to recruit but also retain students by meeting them where they are. And so we have a lot of student activities. We have 23 student chapters in various institutions around the country. They have webinars. They have social gatherings. We provide mentoring. We do a speed mentoring event at our annual meeting. We're very open to, you know, new and different ways to help students succeed as they enter this career. So that's one way. The needs that we recognize that I've experienced myself along my career trajectory, it's not like once you graduate, your
right,
needs
you're
for
done.
Career
yeah.
development end. You continue to have needs for career development. So we try to, again, identify those and then meet them in different ways. We have an education council with a student representative and educators on it who help us understand what some of the needs are. We have a methods council that helps shape what kinds of methods training we offer at our annual research meeting, what kind of workshops. So we're keeping up with the latest sort of cutting-edge methodologic issues that our field and our not just our trainees, but, you know, mid-career folks need to learn newer methods with these new data streams. So that's another way. Very important if you want to succeed in this career is you got to find grants and, you know, money. To pay the bills. And so we've always had a website on our website listing of grant opportunities available from the federal as well as private sector philanthropic organizations, but we're expanding that to a much more robust database of where to go find money. So that's really important. And help folks, we do training workshops around how to write a grant, how to get through peer review, grant peer review. And then we also help connect our field to journals. And so we have partnerships in place with our official journals, which are Health Affairs and Health Services Research. But we also work with JAMA, Journal of American Medical Association, with the Milbank Quarterly and others to provide publication opportunities for our members. And then the other thing that we do is we spend a lot of time trying to bridge the researcher and the user world. So whether that's researchers and federal policymakers, or researchers and state policymakers, or researchers and delivery system leadership. And so we do that in various ways, conferences. We have a national health policy conference. We have fellowships and scholarships where we bring people for time-limited experiences. And then we also have learning communities. We do a number of learning networks where people come together on an ongoing basis to really learn about the latest evidence, share with each other how they've used it, what else they're struggling with. Because what we know from adult learning is that peer learning is very powerful. So those are some of the ways.
Right. Well, and networking, right, with the interest groups and bringing people together.
Thank you. Yes, the interest groups. One of the things that I always say is that Academy Health is a very big tent. Our field is big, as you said earlier. And that's great. It's vibrant. It's diverse. But within a big tent, you can get lost. And so it's important to create places where people can connect with people like them, people who share the same passion or have the same background and methods. And so we have these interest groups that you alluded to. We have 16 of them. Some of them are organized around a topic like disparities research. Others are organized more around a discipline like health economics research. And so it's very much member-led, volunteer-led. We don't tell people how to organize. We just create opportunities for them to do what they want to do and what they find value in.
Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes it's also about connecting with people that are not like you, right? So that you can learn from people who are from other disciplines, especially around topics like translation communications that sort of bridge all of the topics.
Absolutely. And I like your point about not necessarily going to the groups where you know everything mm-hmm. already. I get to, in my role now, all the interest groups are on Saturday, our meetings, our annual meetings, and I get to bounce around from one to the other and kind of just get snippets. And I find I learn the most when I go to work those interest groups I know the least about from a content perspective.
The interdisciplinary nature of the field actually supports that, right? Because it's sort of part of our approach to talk to people from different disciplines and with different perspectives because the issues that we're talking about are so complex.
Exactly. I'd say there's two levels when I think about interdisciplinary. It's both in terms of folks from different disciplines come with a different set of tools and frameworks. And so that helps each of us expand the way we think about this complex problem. In my personal research, where I've focused either on disparities or quality or health IT or childhood obesity, I've always worked with health economists, with PhD health services researchers, because they have a set of, the way they frame the question is very different than how a doctor-trained person frames a question. The tools and the metrics that they know how to use, I mean, I certainly didn't learn about Herfindahl indices in medical school or market power and concentration, but I've done studies. I've been part of studies where we've used those different tools to answer really important questions about the safety of care for Medicaid-insured kids. And so that brings real strength and power to the research.
And that's why you have the annual research meeting and the policy conference, the interest groups, all of those are opportunities to do that kind of collaboration and to connect.
Absolutely.
Would you recommend health services research as a career? And, of course, why? I don't know. That might be a loaded question.
Is a loaded question, but I'll take a stab at it. So, first, I have to be honest. If you had told me when I was in medical school that I would get a master's in public health and epi and biostats when I hated those courses in medical school, I would have
to
said,
be honest,
no way.
I get it.
If you had then told me when I was working in a state health department that I would be doing the kind of work that I'm doing now, I would not have believed it. So I have come to this field not by choice. I'm delighted that I'm here, but it's a lot of...
Well, not by planning, maybe, right?
Right. I chose the field. I didn't plan. Good correction.
Right.
And so as I talk to answer your question about would I recommend this field, absolutely. For a couple of reasons. One is that it is desperately needed. It makes a difference. This information saves lives. It may not be as obvious as I'm going to discover a new drug to cure cancer. That's very hard to do, but I'm going to find an intervention that improves adherence rates to certain anti-HIV drugs that will improve survival. That happens all the time. I mean, I was just reading an abstract this morning. A 60% improvement in the reduction of the viral load, which is the number of viruses in the body. If you can improve the lives of people, it's meaningful. And health services research helps you do that at the population level. So you're not just helping the patient in front of you, or if you're, you know, working in communities, the family you're working with, you can help improve health and outcomes for entire communities. So it's incredibly meaningful. Second is that it's challenging intellectually, and it always sort of asks you to give more of yourself. When you are talking in these interdisciplinary conversations, people will challenge your thinking and disagree with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't just sit on your givens of what you learned and all the hard work you did. You have to always defend it and challenge yourself to say, well, was I right? Did I think about that right? And so that keeps you honest intellectually, and I find that really rich.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end result, you're always learning. I am always learning. Every day on the job, I learn something new. So if you like learning and growing, mm-hmm. it's a great field.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite movie genre? Wait a minute, first of all, do you even go to the movies? Do you like movies?
I love movies. They're my escape.
Okay.
And I don't go to movies anymore because we have pay-per-view at home.
So what's your favorite genre?
My favorite genre. for entertainment, as opposed for pure entertainment, as opposed to sort of thinking and emotion, mm-hmm. science fiction.
Oh, woo-hoo! That's me.
So I'm a total Trekkie. I have read a ton of science fiction books, mm-hmm. all the Asimovs, the Foundation series. Mm-hmm. So even the new remakes of the Star Treks.
Those are awesome.
Exactly. I watched every Star Trek series, Deep Space Nine, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Me too.
Next Generation. So I don't know. There's something about science fiction that allows us to consider, contemplate current challenges, mm-hmm. but through a different frame. And I always find that it allows us to think about the challenge differently. And I'm going to draw a connection here that probably doesn't make sense for most people, and maybe it's not a correct one. But I grew up overseas because my dad was a U.S. diplomat, and I'm bilingual in French. And so having lived in so many different cultures and using a different language, we know from cognitive science that it actually helps people look at problems differently and be mm-hmm. very good yeah. at problem solving because mm-hmm. they bring a different set of sort of cultural constructs to the same issue. And so science fiction kind of appeals to me for that as well, because it's a different world. It's a different culture. And yet it's the same issues that are being played out.
Let's say we could go back to one of the popular Star Trek series and insert something about health services, because again, they've sort of figured a lot of things out. So you don't really see issues of cost, you know, quality of care or right. the cost of care, because everybody just gets care. Is there a creative way we could insert a story about health services research into a Star Trek
series? Well, yes, I think you could, because, and maybe one of my favorite of all the Star Trek series is The Next Generation. Mm-hmm. My staff here have heard me say that one of my favorite sayings is, make it so. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Captain Picard says, make it so. I wish life were that easy. Make it so. But one of the things that the Star Trek program does is they visit all kinds of different planets, and the prime directive is you must not interfere with mm-hmm. the cultures that they encounter. And yet, in each of those cultures, one could insert that they have certain challenges in health services that have not been addressed yet,
right.
like access, like equity. So I think that you could play out stories about, well, in this culture, in this planet, health outcomes are disparate by income, by if they have different races on that planet or different ethnicities. And you could play out a story about a fundamental issue in health services research, which is health disparities.
Right, right.
And so I think you could definitely insert through the lens of these other cultures the challenges that health services research is facing in terms of the solutions. Well, the Star Trek team would have all the solutions because they've solved them all back on Earth. Well, you remind me of my daughter. I have twin boy-girl twins who are almost 14, and my daughter's been watching Grey's Anatomy. A couple of the lead characters in Grey's Anatomy are also researchers, but the type of researcher they are is, you know, they're using 3D printing to make
yes.
organs.
Yes, exactly. And, or tumors, to model
right.
a tumor.
Right.
And
my
that.
Daughter, you know, is very interested in doing research. She asked me, well, how could she, would she be able to write a paper that could get into a journal? And I said, well, do you know your mother's published 80 articles in journals? And she was dumbfounded. So why couldn't they have one of the lead characters in Grey's Anatomy be doing research in the community to improve mammography rates among African-American women? More women die, it's an easy story to tell, it doesn't have to be complicated, but showing that some intervention doubled the mammography screening rates, and that's going to save this many lives. I think that's a powerful story to tell. It doesn't have to be some gizmo in a laboratory.
Exactly. And it connects directly, right? Because the outcomes that they have in the emergency room and all the surgeries and everything also connect to the experiences that people have when
Absolutely.
They're in their community. The lack of care that they get or the quality of care they get before they get to that spot matters. The
exactly.
insurance that they have matters.
Exactly.
The way, you know, they have had episodes where they've talked about the leadership of the surgery teams and all of that, but not the general operations of it.
Right.
So, okay, so we're going to have to call up Shonda Rhimes is what you're saying.
Yes, yes.
Who has a connection with Shonda? Thank you so much for joining us for Health Services Unplugged, and thank you for being our first expert guest.
Well, it's been a delight. I've really enjoyed our conversation, and now you've made me want to go back and watch a Star Trek movie.
Health Services Unplugged is presented by Academy Health with support from Kaiser Permanente and produced by me, Dr. Felicia Mebben, and executive producer, Dr. Imani Cheers, with music by Dr. Cheryl Mebben. You can learn more about this project and the rest of Academy Health at academyhealth.org.